Chapter 10 Closing Experiences and Our Journey to Arabia. Our work here is finished for the present, said Saint Germain, as the singing came to a close. Let us now go to the great chamber and dine. We had just become seated at the table when Daphne appeared at the great organ, and Arion stood beside her with a most wonderful violin. They began to play, and a soft globe of iridescent light formed near the ceiling, out of which came a most glorious tenor voice, singing, "In the name of Christ we reign," whose melody and lyrics were tremendously inspiring. Saint Germain felt the question in our minds as to who the singer was, and in answer to our thoughts replied, "You shall one day see this cosmic singer face to face." Daphne greeted the children rapturously and asked the quartet to sing to the accompaniment of the organ and violin. We enjoyed a glorious hour after the music by renewing our acquaintance with those present, some of whom we were to meet again in the Far East. It was nearly daybreak by the time the other guests had gone, and we five were alone with Saint Germain. "Retire now," he said, "and get your needed rest, so you may return home tomorrow afternoon." The next day, the bell awakened us at 11 o'clock, for we were to meet with our beloved master in the great chamber. As we came near, we noticed the great doors were already open, and the interior was lighted as brilliantly as the noonday sun. We had never experienced this effect of interior sunlight before. "Why are you still astonished at these things?" asked Saint Germain, aware of surprise. "You know every conceivable thing can be accomplished in the ascended state of consciousness. These things are always possible and are produced with absolute certainty and perfect ease. I know you are not yet accustomed to what seems unusual, but to the Master Christ, the I Am presence within you, there cannot be anything unusual. Try to realize this fully, so you too can live in the ascended master consciousness and come into the knowledge and the use of this same transcendent freedom. Now let us be seated." Immediately, a most delicious luncheon appeared before us, and while we ate, Saint Germain gave instructions for the journey to the Far East. "I would suggest," he remarked, "that you travel as lightly as possible. Follow your inner impulse always, for you will be perfectly directed at all times. You are surely aware by now that clothing or anything else you may require is always available. You need not be encumbered unnecessarily with luggage on this journey. I will meet with you in the tower room on the 10th of August at 8 o'clock in the evening, when the date of your departure will be decided." Saint Germain went with us to the auto, and after bidding us a loving goodbye, returned to the retreat. We entered the car and drove back to the ranch. The next 2 weeks were busy ones indeed, as we completed arrangements for our journey to the East. Upon Rex devolved the duty of giving some explanation to the foreman about Daniel Rayborn's continued absence. "My father," he explained to him one morning, "has been called to the Far East, where he will remain indefinitely. I will be in charge of things here, although Nada and I will be traveling abroad for about 2 years. Can we depend upon you to look after the ranch during our absence?" "I will do the best to take care of everything as you desire," he replied. "My assistant is quite dependable and capable of taking charge should anything happen to me." Time passed on wings, and the 10th arrived, filled with joyous anticipation of our evening with Saint Germain. Until one has had some such experience as was our privilege of association with him, it is impossible to convey the great happiness we felt in the contemplation of still greater enlightenment. Our recent instruction during the ascension of Daniel Rayborn and my contact with the white-haired elderly gentleman who sought so long for the man with the crystal cup were a tremendous encouragement and sufficient inducement for us to reach to the light with all the intensity of our beings to make the ascension also. At 8 o'clock, as we approached the tower room, the door opened and Saint Germain stood before us with extended arms, radiant and resplendent. We exchanged loving greetings, took our places, and he conveyed the love and blessings from the mother and father of Rex and Nada. "Time of your departure," he began, "is set for the 20th of August. I think it would be well if Rex, Bob, and this brother," nodding to me, "make one more trip to the mine before leaving for the East, in order to give strength and encouragement to the Livingstons. I had not intended this when you left the mine, but I think it the part of wisdom to see them once more. Gaylord will meet you in Paris near the end of October, as soon as he finishes his work in South America. Now I have something else to tell you. The outer entrance to the Cave of Symbols has been closed, and unless one had been there, it would not be possible to locate it again. Certain individuals did discover it, and were planning to take a research party there. It has been necessary to prevent that. You see, beloved ones, we have all power and limitless means within our control by which to guard and protect whatever needs our protection. I will give you certain instructions for your immediate use, and then I must leave to meet with the South American branch of the Great White Brotherhood." After indicating what was needed, he raised his hand in blessing and, with a radiant smile, was gone. Bob's enthusiasm kept pace with his advancement. It was one of the most wonderful things I have ever experienced to observe how his intense longing for the full ascension focused his attention upon the light with uninterrupted joy and determination. Nada and Pearl were expressing the great wisdom of the mighty I Am Presence as the expansion of the light increased within them. It was most apparent in their eyes. We drove to the mine on the 12th and arrived there at 6 in the evening. All were surprised except Zara, who said she knew we would visit them again before leaving for abroad. We left early the next morning and returned to the ranch, knowing our visit would be a sustaining strength to the Livingstons. I shall never forget our last night in that wonderful ranch home, where so much happiness had come to all of us, and where events of such paramount importance had occurred that affected the life of each one so vitally. I felt a strong impulse to go to the tower room for a farewell meditation. It grew so strong that I asked the rest to join me. As we approached the door, it opened to admit us, and within there was the same soft, beautiful radiance that hallowed it with a sacred presence, a peace unspeakable. The door closed behind us, and involuntarily I dropped to my knees in the greatest praise and gratitude I had ever known. Suddenly my feelings found expression, and the words poured forth from my I Am Presence, giving voice to the deepest outpourings of my soul, in phrases far beyond my outer ability. As I finished, Bob uttered a prayer of such beauty that it thrilled everyone. The others felt the same impulse, and expressed their feelings from the depths of their hearts. Surely that outpouring of our love and gratitude must have reached into the very heart center of creation, it was so intense and sincere. As we finished, the light in the room became perfectly dazzling. Suddenly a strong, masterful voice spoke from the ethers, saying, "All is well. In following your prompting to give expression to that inner feeling of praise, you have contacted great heights, as well as great ascended beings. This will bring you blessings untold. The peace of the cosmic Christ enfolds you and carries you forth on wings of light until you have reached eternal perfection." Slowly the light diminished until only a soft radiance remained. We silently left the room, knowing we were under the loving, watchful care of mighty powers of light, of which as yet we had very little conception. A deep, unspeakable radiation of love and heavenly joy went from each one to the others as we retired to our rooms. We left by train early the next morning and arrived in New York a few days before we sailed. While enjoying many things of interest there, we felt a tremendous inner appreciation for the Statue of Liberty. What a wonderful symbol that is, said Nada. And how few ever stop to realize what it means. It is really a focus of spiritual power, guarding the shores of America. The torch held high represents the light of the mighty I Am Presence, which reveals the way and sends its rays of love and peace unto all mankind. The majesty and power of the figure itself is a marvelous expression of the great presence which carries the light, and not only guards and sustains America, but all of mankind who truly seek the light. It is as though the spirit of America held the light high in silent greeting to the figure of the Christ that stands high on the towering Andes in South America. Little is known of the mighty power that caused the Statue of Liberty to be placed where it is, and why the figure of Jesus occupies its high pinnacle in the southern hemisphere. These are not accidents or the results of blind chance, for there is no such thing anywhere in the universe. What seems so to the intellect is but the lack of understanding of the law of the universe. You may be sure that these figures placed at these particular points give indication of the service that both continents will give to the rest of the world. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon of the 28th, we boarded the SS Majestic, truly a floating palace. The tugboat towed her out toward the open sea, and as she began to plow her way through the mighty deep, we stood watching our Goddess of Liberty fade from view. We went down to the dining room at the first call for dinner, where we had reserved a table for six, expecting, of course, that our party would be alone. We had just finished ordering when the steward brought a beautiful young lady to our table. As I looked up, imagine my astonishment, when before us stood the pupil of the head of the Council of France, at whose home we had spent a week before returning to America with the Livingstons. It was she whom I had first contacted as the Veiled Sister, and who was Gaylord's twin Ray. She greeted me cordially, and as I turned to present the others, said, "You may call me Leto." After greeting her, they expressed their joy and delight for her presence. "I have come," she explained, "to take you to our home in Paris, which my master wishes you to make your home while abroad. It will make him very happy to extend his hospitality to you all." We joyously accepted his invitation, knowing it to be a part of the divine plan Saint Germain had arranged for us. To add to our happiness, we found her suite next to that of Nada and Pearl. When opportunity offered, I explained to the others that this little lady, who looked not more than 17, had used her present body over 300 years. I almost strained the credulity of my friends, in spite of all Saint Germain had said and done, that they might become accustomed to the great truth and reality of the ascended masters and their work. The first evening we sat on deck completely at one with the great peace of the deep, for it was calm as a mirror, silvered by the beauty of a full moon. The next evening we spent in our suite listening to the instruction given by Leto. She explained how to lay the body down, leaving it consciously and at will. It was the simplicity and clearness of her explanation that made all comprehend everything so clearly and realize something of the possibilities of the attainment before us. "This training I am giving you," she said, "is most efficient, and I will show you the proof of it tomorrow evening." In Leto's radiation, everything seemed simple, clear and easy of accomplishment, for all imperfection or human creation was instantly consumed on entering her presence. Our joy and gratitude were very great when we heard that she was to instruct us during the entire journey. Again we marveled at the way all was prepared ahead for us by the mighty I Am Presence, working through the glorious ascended masters. This is their activity for and to the student, when he enters sufficiently into the light, the great ascending stream of life, where his eternal freedom always exists. As each of us said good night to Leto, it seemed as though a gossamer garment of light enfolded us, and the fragrance of heather, which had filled the room all evening, clung to us while we retired. We met at breakfast, and the radiance was even greater than the night before. During the course of our conversation, I asked her why we had been conscious of the fragrance of heather during her instruction. In the 11th century, she explained, I lived in Scotland, and during an experience of that life, the memory of heather became very dear. Ever since then, at most unexpected moments, the fragrance of heather radiates very strongly, so much so that many times it is noticed by those about me. I observed that Leda wore a simple white garment, yet it gave the effect of having a glint of many colors shining through. She answered my thought about it immediately by saying, This garment I am wearing is a seamless one, not made with hands, but precipitated direct from pure light substance, hence the glint and radiance you see. It will never soil or show wear. It will not be long until each of you will be wearing the same kind of garment. In the fully awakened, or what you call the ascended master consciousness, we never encumber ourselves with luggage of any kind, for in the ethers all about us is the pure substance from which we form everything, as we desire to use it. All we need to do is to bring it into form through holding the conscious attention upon our mental picture or visualized form. This creates a focus for the concentration and condensation of the electronic light in the ether, which fills all space everywhere. Our feeling, united with the mental picture, sets up a drawing activity, a magnetic pull, upon the pure electronic substance. With this feeling, there must enter a certain knowledge of how to raise or lower the vibratory rate in the aura around the electron, for the vibratory rate of the aura determines the quality and material of the precipitated article. When I use the term electron, I mean an eternally pure heart center of immortal fire, a perfect balance of light, substance, and intelligence, around which is an aura of lesser light that the scientific world calls a force field. The electron is forever changelessly perfect, but the force field, or aura, around it is subject to expansion and contraction, and this is the determining factor in bringing substance into form from the invisible into the visible. Because of the inherent intelligence within the electron, it becomes an obedient servant and is subject to the manipulation of the individual who acknowledges his source of life by his awareness of the mighty I Am presence within himself. From this height of consciousness, such an individual, by a direct command of the intelligence within the electron, can release a wave of its fire to flow out and cause the force field to expand or contract at his will. This is the raising or lowering of the vibratory rate, and is the activity that causes the force field to register or become the quality of the material which he brings into physical form. For illustration, iron has a much lower vibratory rate than gold, and if one be precipitating gold, the force field around the electron would naturally be much larger in extent and hence contain more of the immortal fire than would that of iron. In bringing about this sort of manifestation, the vision and feeling must be held steady to produce quick results. It is the work of the student to master himself and maintain the conscious control and direction of the energy within his own mind and body, so that he is able to govern the flow of its power through the channels of sight and feeling to a definite objective and hold it there until the receptacle, which is his mental picture, is filled full of the living luminous substance from the universal fire of life. This instruction is for your youth, and you must apply it if you wish to attain any degree of mastery. For only by use of the knowledge we already have can we utilize that which is still greater. No one can ever attain any degree of mastery except through the operation of the great inner law of the I Am. The greatest of all fundamentals is to remember forever that from the lowest to the highest being in the universe, the only presence and power which can move or do anything constructive is that conscious intelligence which acknowledges its own being and manifestation by decreeing, I am, followed by whatever quality that being desires to bring into outer existence. It is the Word of God, through which all creation takes place, and without it, creation does not take place. Remember, there is only one power that can move through creation, and that is the mighty electronic light existing everywhere and interpenetrating all manifestation. The individual who can say, I am, by that acknowledgement of his own existence, must accept the responsibility of his own decrees. The great creative principle is everywhere present, the same as the use of the multiplication table. But it takes the individual's acknowledgement of his I am presence to set into action and fulfill his plan of life, which is perfection or perfect balance. The personality or outer activity of the individual is but one focus through which the magic presence of the I am acts. If the energy of the mighty I am is qualified by thoughts and feelings that consider only the appetites of the flesh body, the perfect balance of the individual's vehicle is not maintained and is like a wheel off center. Hence imperfection and discord is expressed. But if the individual considers the perfect balance and makes his decree include the whole instead of only a part of his universe, he will only follow his acknowledgement of the I am presence and the release of its power by decrees that maintain the perfect balance. Any decree of life that accepts less than limitless perfection is not the plan of God, and will continue to destroy the forms in which it is focused until the decree of full perfection is expressed. When the student understands this, he will keep joyously radiant and firmly conscious of only his mighty I am presence, never allowing his spoken word to go forth decreeing anything less than the perfection of life. From our height of consciousness, after having watched mankind for centuries in the struggle through self-created misery and discord, it is amazing how humanity refuses to understand why the minds and bodies of the race continue to grow old, decay, and disintegrate, when some of the most materialistic scientists acknowledge that the cell, of which the physical bodies are made up, is eternally immortal. The cell contains within it the power to eternally renew and sustain itself, because there is perfect balance in all its parts. If left to its own activity and sphere, it will continue to maintain that perfection. The wonder to us is that the race is content to go through the experience of death while all the time clinging to youth, beauty, and life, and yet refusing to keep harmonious enough to let it be maintained. A student who will stand at one with his I am presence, accepting and decreeing only its perfection and great inner power, will release its flow through the outer activity of mind and body and produce whatsoever he decrees. To be able to come and go from the body at will is a necessary step in the student's freedom that will lead to many greater attainments. A part of my service to humanity is in teaching individuals how to do this, a work for which I have a deep love and natural ability. I am able to convey this idea to others so they too are able to go forth and comprehend life in a greater measure. Within 2 months, you will be able to come and go from your bodies consciously, as easily as you now come and go from your home. At first, I will assist you until you understand and fix the operation in your consciousness. Then you will be able to accomplish what you desire entirely by your own effort. We rarely find several individuals ready for this instruction at the same time. But because you four are two sets of twin rays working together, is this unusual condition explained. Let us enjoy the sea breeze, the beauty of the night, and the perfect weather which we shall have while crossing. for there are never storms or disturbances where there is a focus of the Great White Brotherhood. Each member is a definite focus. I have work to do now at a distance, so must leave you until 4 this afternoon, and I will return and be with you at dinner. I have always enjoyed travel at sea, but this voyage was more than enjoyable, for our association and work with Leto kept us constantly aware of the God Presence. Later in the day, I had occasion to chat for a few minutes with the captain, and he said during his entire 15 years on the sea, he had never had a more marvelous voyage. I could have told him why, but it was the part of wisdom to remain silent. As we were taking our places at the table for dinner, Leto returned and joined us, saying, "I have joyous information. Splendid things have just been accomplished for the blessing of humanity. I tell you this much that you may rejoice with me, but later you shall know the full details of it, probably when we arrive in Arabia. It pleases me that you have been able to keep your consciousness so well focused upon the magic presence of the I Am. Tonight, before our work begins, I want you to enjoy the sunset with me, for you shall not have another such opportunity for 50 years, due to certain cosmic activities which as yet you do not understand." Leto had chairs placed on the top deck, where we would be undisturbed. When we were all comfortably seated, she continued, "You remember that Saint Germain said to you, 'The sun of this system is to the whole system what the heart is to the human body, its currents of energy being the bloodstream of this system of worlds, the ether belt around this earth being the lungs, through which the currents of energy, constantly pouring forth, are ever purifying the body of the earth. The sun is also the head or father of this system, through which this mighty energy is constantly generated by the mighty intelligence focused there, from glorious ascended beings who have charge of and govern that activity. The sun is not hot, as scientists think. It is as cool and 1,000 times more refreshing than the gentle zephyrs of the most delightful summer evening. It is only as the sun's currents of energy pass through the ether belt of the earth that they become heat. The sun is the electronic pole and the earth is the magnetic pole. The ether belt is the element through which the currents are diversified. The Christ mind is embodied in great beings upon the sun, similar to the way it is here on earth. Always keep this in mind. God sent forth his rays, individualizing himself, in order to govern, regulate, and direct his activity through self-conscious beings. That is why we, as the sons of God, are given free will, choice. By recognizing and accepting fully this mighty God power, love, and intelligence anchored in us, we become able to express more and more of the full power of God in conscious action. Only the most advanced students realize that there are mighty beings, as much beyond the Lord of the Earth as the Lord of the Earth is beyond the ordinary mortal. Now, each of you withdraw the consciousness from your body and place it fully upon the sun. Partly close your eyes, and then wait. We sat very still for almost 20 minutes, and then went forth as a group, Leto leading the way. She became dazzling and radiant. Deeper and deeper we entered into the intense light of that great focus of cosmic light, and presently became aware that we were approaching the globe itself. The radiance which it emitted gave one a feeling of great exaltation, with a glowing sensation of peace and power. The nearer Leto drew, the brighter became her radiance. We then approached a magnificent city called the City of the Sun. Within it were wonderful perfected beings like ourselves, except that their bodies were slightly larger than those of our humanity. But their radiance and beauty were transcendent beyond words. Presently we found ourselves receding. The glorious city began to fade from view, the indescribable light grew less, and then we heard Leto speaking, commanding us to return with her. With a sudden shock, we were conscious again of our physical bodies. A grand success, she said smilingly. I have brought this about, that each may bear witness to the others of what you have seen, for in this is tremendous strength. The concept which mankind has that the sun is a focus of great heat is absurd and infantile. The truth is that the tremendous rays of energy which it sends forth to its system of planets are not heat rays at all, but rays of electronic energy, which only become heat as they contact and penetrate the atmosphere of the Earth. The atmosphere surrounding our planet is a force field produced by the rays of magnetic force sent forth from the center of this planet, and when the rays of electronic energy from the sun touch these, we have the phenomena in our atmosphere that we call heat and light from the sun. We enjoyed the twilight on deck until 7:30 and then went to Leto's stateroom. We took our places in 5 reclining chairs, which she had provided for our use, in which the body was perfectly poised and at ease. Then Leto began her instruction. Focus your attention on the heart for a moment, she explained. Then raise it to the top of the head. Keep it there without change, and let the following be your only thought. Mighty I Am Presence, which I am, now take charge in full mastery of this body. See that I go and come from it consciously and at will. Never again can it bind me or limit my freedom. It could not have been more than 3 minutes until we stood before our bodies, free, consciously free, in bodies of substance, but finer than that of the physical body. In these, we were more clearly alert and free than we had ever been in the physical. Come with me, said Leto, and instantly we passed out of the room over placid waters and went direct to her home in Paris. We saw and greeted her master. Then we continued our journey to the home of the Brotherhood in Arabia, which we visited later. When we returned near our bodies, she spoke again. Wait, we are going to do this consciously, she directed. She went to each body as it lay in the chair and touched the forehead. Immediately the body stood up, yet looked as if asleep. Then she gave the necessary direction, which I may not give here, and we were again fully conscious in our bodies. The whole experience was different from anything we had ever lived through before, and it left us with a certain indescribable confidence that we could do it again. We tried to thank her, but she raised her hand for silence. Love serves because it is the nature of love to give. It is not concerned with, nor does it expect, acknowledgement of its gifts. However, your gratitude is beautiful and well known to me. Just try to become the love that does not wish to possess, for then love is truly divine. The following days were filled with joy and beauty, repose and peace as we watched the sunlit waters by day, and at night the wonderful moonlight, until one's very being breathed praise and gratitude for the happiness of just being alive. The boat docked at Cherbourg, and following Leto as she led the way, we went to the waiting autos, and were driven to Paris, Pearl and Nada riding in her car, and Bob, Rex, and I in the second one. When we arrived at her home in Paris, her master greeted us in his gracious, courtly manner. It is our great joy, he said, to have you make this your home as long as you wish. And we want you to feel just as free to come and go as if you were in your own home in America. The next few days we spent with these blessed masters, learning many wonderful things and receiving some insight into the marvelous work of the Great White Brotherhood. Its stupendous power, inner working and accomplishment simply stagger the intellect of one unaccustomed to this kind of knowledge. We were placed under definite training, and Leto, after finishing our instruction for the day, showed us the places of interest in the afternoon. Not a moment was wasted, as she said we were to leave soon for Arabia, and that she expected the call within a week. While visiting the Louvre, Leto showed us a painting by a young artist who had painted a picture called The Union of Two Souls. It was intended to portray the union of the twin rays, and was a marvelous conception, a wonderful work of art. We are watching, she said, for an opportunity to see if this artist can be awakened to the inner wisdom after having received such an interpretation of his idea. In the midst of his work, he unknowingly shut the door to the inspiration he had received at the beginning, and my master, seeing the need, gave the necessary assistance, which re-established his contact with his divine inspiration and enabled him to complete the picture. It was unknown, of course, to him, but the marvelous painting you see before you was the result. Often, an artist, musician, writer, inventor, and many other individuals doing creative work are given such assistance from the ascended masters, of which those receiving the help know nothing. This sort of activity is one way in which we work impersonally. We attended one meeting of the Great White Brotherhood, to which the members came from all over the world, among them being Gaylord's friend, whom I had met when Gaylord was abducted to Paris. It was a never-ending source of joy to know of the important work being accomplished by the members of the Great White Brotherhood, entirely unknown to the outer world. Many sincere people who wish to live the constructive way of life are members of this brotherhood at the inner levels, long before they become aware of it in the outer senses. The time arrived for our departure, and Leto was to conduct us to the east. We said goodbye to her blessed master and drove to Marseille by car. We went direct to the steamship office of the Messagerie Maritime Line. As we entered, a tall, fine-looking man in Arabian dress came out and bowed before Leto. "Your Highness," he said, "reservations are on the steamship Mariette Pache. This envelope contains the necessary papers. Your accommodations at the usual place are in readiness. Can I be of further service?" He touched his heart and forehead, and Leto, returning the salutation, gave him a sign which we recognized as belonging to the Great White Brotherhood. We knew by that he was one of the brothers. We returned to the auto and were taken to what proved to be a private old hostelry, quaint but spotlessly clean, and the accommodation good. Leto told the driver to call for us at 9 the next morning, and I must confess I was greatly interested to know why she was addressed as Your Highness. Promptly at 9, we entered the autos and were driven to the pier, Leto telling the drivers to return to Paris. As we boarded the ship, our entire party was shown great deference, and our accommodations were truly palatial. We had a delightful trip on the deep blue waters of the Mediterranean, and finally docked at Alexandria. Leto again led the way to waiting autos, and after driving for about 20 minutes, we entered a walled enclosure and stopped before a beautiful home built in the Moorish type of architecture. A youth in Arabian dress admitted us and led the way to a circular room. A tall, beautiful woman, who looked not more than 20, yet whose eyes held deep wisdom, came forward and greeted us graciously. Leto presented her to us as Electra. "Beloved sisters and brothers," she said, "I have been expecting you, and you are most welcome. Please accept my humble hospitality now and at any time that you are in Alexandria. You will honor me to make this your home. Your beloved master was here yesterday and asked that you remain for 2 days. At the end of that time, a boat will take you to a place on the coast of Arabia from which you will drive to your destination." She then touched a set of exquisite chimes. The youth returned and showed us to our separate suites. During our conversation at dinner, we learned something of Electra's family. Her father was an Englishman and her mother was a Frenchwoman. Someone asked how long it had been since they had passed on, and she replied, 125 years ago. "You see," she continued, "I am not as far advanced as your wonderful escort, but I have attained enough dominion to eliminate time and space. Electra, said Alito, is far advanced and is doing beautiful work, as you will see later. While we are in Alexandria, we shall see the places of interest, and we shall spend the next 2 days enjoying ourselves. We were very much interested the next morning in sightseeing. When we stopped at a certain jeweler's stall, admiring the beautiful jewels and the exquisite workmanship of their settings, the old jeweler made a deep bow, and in salutation touched his heart and head, asking to see Rex's and Bob's rings. He was very silent for a few moments, and then, looking steadily at them, remarked, "My brothers, you have done me a great honor. Only once before have I ever seen such jewels. They are condensed light. They are living gems. You are blessed indeed." As we thanked him and turned to go, he asked the blessing of the Most High God upon us. The second evening after visiting the old jeweler, we were listening to Electra describing her experiences when a sealed envelope dropped out of the atmosphere directly at the feet of Rex. He opened it anxiously and found a message from our beloved Saint Germain. In the morning it read, "A yacht belonging to one of the brothers will take you to a certain port, from which you will proceed by auto to your destination in Arabia. Your mother and father send greetings and love to all." The next morning Electra accompanied us to the yacht, a beautiful, graceful boat, as trim as a greyhound. "I shall expect you on your return before you go to India," she said, as she bade us goodbye. When we went aboard the yacht, we had another surprise, for its owner was none other than Gaylord's friend, the brother who met me at the boat when I arrived in Cherbourg, while Gaylord was being held captive. Our entire journey was well prepared at every point, with much comfort and convenience. One can scarcely realize the joy of these activities unless he has experienced something of this sort. As soon as we were well out at sea, our host gave us his undivided attention. "I have just received a letter," he said, "from Gaylord, who is still in South America. He is completing certain work there and asked to be remembered to everyone. He says he hopes to see you before many more weeks have passed, and until then his love is ever enfolding you." We thanked our host for the message from our friend, for whose welfare we felt deeply concerned. Our trip through the Suez Canal was delightful, and there was so much of divine tradition attached to the Red Sea that we expected to feel a thrill in passing through it. We had repeatedly experienced such wonderful things that we half anticipated the waters to divide and the scenes of long ago to appear in the ether. As we recalled the miracles of that time, our host instructed. "Miracles," he explained, "are but the result of a mighty, omnipresent cosmic law set into action consciously by one who accepts his divine authority and understands its use. The laws governing any kind of manifestation which the human mind considers supernatural are as natural and unerring as the motion of a planet. All activity from the electron to the greatest suns in space is under the control and exact operation of law, sent into operation by self-conscious, individualized intelligence. When an individual understands and applies the great law governing manifestation in form, he can and does produce exact results. So truthfully speaking, there are no miracles. Miracles are but the effect of the application of law by an individual to bring about a specific result. All may learn to do this if they desire it strongly enough and will discipline the outer activity of thought and feeling." We reached our port and were met by machines to take us the rest of the way. Our host accompanied us to the Arabian retreat and gave directions for his yacht to remain until we returned. We had dined before leaving the yacht, as it was late in the afternoon when we reached the port. Leto explained that we were to travel during the night in order to be unobserved through this part of the country. We traveled through many strange places and arrived at our destination just before daybreak. We came to a stop before the little hut that Gaylord had described to us, near the foot of a hill. How we were able to reach it by auto instead of camels we did not know, nor was it our business to inquire at that time. We knew we were guests of a mighty presence and power, and our duty was to remain silent until information was volunteered. Curiosity on the part of a student is inexcusable in spiritual training and must be completely eliminated from the consciousness before a certain understanding, power, and experiences are permitted to be given him along the path to mastery. Unless it is completely consumed within the personality, it is a wide open door through which the sinister force can act at any moment and cut off the further progress of the advancing student. Whenever it was necessary, all that we needed to know was explained, without our asking. Dawn was just breaking as we reached the hut, and immediately a tall man in an indigo cape came out to bid us welcome. He greeted each one cordially and requested us to return to our autos. Then, had a cataclysm occurred, we could scarcely have been more surprised, for directly in front of us the earth opened, revealing a sort of jaw-like entrance made of metal large enough to admit our cars. This led on to a well-paved road with a downward incline. The jaw was controlled by powerful machinery, and when it closed after us, a few moments later, it was to all appearances simply the floor of the Arabian desert. As our cars entered the roadway leading down, the surrounding walls became flooded with that soft white light which we knew so well, and which the Ascended Masters always use for illuminating tunnels, caves, and all subterranean passageways. We traveled along slowly for about 20 minutes, and then entered a circular room nearly 200 feet in diameter. In this place, all equipment was kept for the automobiles and attendants provided, ready to render any service required. The brother in the indigo cape alighted and led the way to what proved to be an elevator. We entered, descended for about 370 feet, and came to a stop, entering an enormous chamber with huge columns, almost 300 feet high. These great columns were heavily covered with hieroglyphics, inlaid in marvelously beautiful colors. We found later that it had been the foyer to a large government building. Our guide led us through this chamber to a great arched doorway that opened at his command, admitting us into another chamber that was beautifully decorated. Its ceiling was arched and very ornate, supported by a single colossal column in the center. This second room must have been at least 200 feet each way. Brother of the Indigo Cape broke the silence. "This is one of our principal council chambers," he explained, "which we often use as a banquet hall. Beloved sisters and brothers, you who are not yet formally admitted members to of our order, are the first students ever admitted to this very ancient retreat, without having been fully accepted into the outer activities of this branch of the Great White Brotherhood. But I assure you, your credentials are quite sufficient." With these words, he threw back the cowl of his cape, and our blessed Master Saint Germain stood before us. We were thrilled and felt immediately quite at home. "You will now be shown to your quarters, and after having refreshed yourselves and donned your seamless robes, come to me here." A youth and maiden appeared and showed us the way to our rooms. Later, when we returned to the council hall, a number of the brothers had already arrived and were talking to Saint Germain. "In 7 days," he explained, "an international council of the Great White Brotherhood is to be held in this retreat. The greatest of our members will be here, as this kind of council is only called every 7 years. On this occasion, you will be made members of the outer body as well as the inner. Please be seated, for I wish to give you information concerning the city you are now in. He then gave us another wonderful discourse, and it made us marvel at what a place of wonders this earth is, let alone the rest of the universe. At one time, he explained, this city was at the surface of the earth. Certain of the ascended masters knew a cataclysm was threatening, and sealed a portion of it for future use. In the catastrophe that followed, it sank deep below the original level and was filled in and covered over by the sand from the surrounding land, which had become a desert. The tops of the highest buildings are in some places fully 125 feet beneath the surface. Air passages have been kept open and always give perfect ventilation. Within this subterranean city have been perfected some of the most wonderful achievements in chemistry and invention that the outer world has been privileged to receive. Whenever this has occurred, some worthy man or woman has been found through whom the world has been privileged to receive these blessings. There is here much of vital importance ready to be brought forth for the use of humanity when it is the part of wisdom in the judgment of the ascended masters to give it out. Again, there will be another great cataclysm that will rend the surface of the earth, removing from further self-created destruction those human beings who have the ignorance and presumption to say, there is no God. Those who are so bound by their self-created darkness that they destroy the very symbols on earth of what is good, true, uplifting, and enlightening, must, because of the very darkness of their own minds, be prevented from creating any further discord upon this planet, and from influencing others by their own mistaken concepts of life. Whatever and whoever denies God, the source of all life and light, can only exist as long as the energy which they have already received can sustain them, because the moment an individual, group, or nation denies the very source of life, that instant the inflowing stream of life energy is cut off, and it can only continue to function until the force which has already been accumulated becomes exhausted. The collapse and self-annihilation of these is inevitable. Denial of life and light cuts off the sustaining energy, while acknowledgement of life and light releases it and lets it flow through the body and mind that makes the acknowledgement. The great law governing all form, or the law of cause and effect, tolerates man's iniquity to man only so long when that iniquity is directed to the Godhead or source of life. Retribution is swift and certain. There is an automatic purifying and balancing process within all life, and when any outer activity opposes itself to the cosmic law of forward motion and ever-expanding perfection, which is always pressing from within outward, then the hour arrives when all opposition is swept aside and annihilated by the onward moving impulse within life itself. When those ruling a nation turn from God, destroying all that calls attention to the light of Christ, it means the end of that government and group is close at hand, because it causes a certain cosmic activity to be released upon the planet which sweeps them out of existence. The human intellect acquires many peculiar kinks in its thinking, and one of the most disastrous of these is the activity of human consciousness that refuses or forgets to love and thank life, the mighty I Am Presence, for the blessings life is constantly bestowing upon mankind and this earth. The average human being lives life after life without once loving or thanking his own mighty I Am Presence for the energy which flows ceaselessly through his mind and body, for the substance he uses in his body and world, or for the hundreds of good things by which he is constantly surrounded, which he uses and enjoys, and yet gives nothing of himself in return. Many people carry a feeling of personal grudge against life, blaming it for their suffering and failures, when even a very small amount of gratitude and love poured out to the I Am Presence within each human heart would transmute every discord into peace and love, releasing the perfection of life into the outer activity of the individual. Human beings find plenty of time to love dogs and cats, food, clothes, money, diamonds, people, and 1,001 things. But it is very rarely that an individual takes even 5 minutes out of a lifetime to love his own divinity. Yet he is using every second its life and energy by which to enjoy those things. Even those who think they love God give almost no acknowledgement to the mighty I Am presence within themselves, and no gratitude goes up to it for the good things that come to them in life. It is not that we should not pour out love to things in the outer activity, but we should certainly love the divinity within first and more than any outer thing or personality. It is this very life and consciousness by which we exist. Happiness cannot exist except when love is pouring out. This is life's law. When people are loving something or somebody, they are happy. Even a miser is happy when he is loving his gold, because he is pouring out a feeling of love to the thing he tries to hold. What he is really trying to hold is happiness. But he does not realize that the feeling of happiness is not contained in the gold, but is in the pouring out of love from himself. In that outpouring, he lets life flow uninterruptedly and harmoniously. However, having received all good we ever used from the mighty I Am presence which builds each physical body, the first and greatest outpouring of our love belongs always to our own individualized flame of God, the mighty consciousness of life within us, which enables us to acknowledge our own existence and source of all life when we say, I Am. In those words is all of God, and nothing in human experience is really important but all of God. When the individual accepts, acknowledges, and feels all of God, he is happy. He has all good, and then he lives in the Father's mansion. Is it possible for anything to be more important or greater than all of God? Only with the understanding and feeling of this can mankind break the chains of self-created limitations. Now you must rest, and then it will be my privilege to escort you through this underground city, where you will see the brothers at work. I make but one request, that no detail of this work be revealed without permission from the highest master in charge. He bade us good night, and we went to our quarters. These had been constructed similar to the Greek and Roman type of architecture, yet they were far older. The room assigned to me contained a built-in Roman bath, the most beautiful thing I have ever seen of this kind. Everywhere the atmosphere was laden with the fragrance of flowers, usually roses. In the morning we were awakened by soft music played on instruments of a most unusual type, and the effect upon our bodies can hardly be described, for it gave one the feeling of ease and freedom, as if a pressure of some kind were being released. The sensation continued to increase, and while we were clearly conscious of some change going on within us, yet we did not realize to what extent our inner bodies were being attuned. The curious thing about the whole experience is that when we compared notes with each other, all had been affected in a similar manner. As we entered the council chamber, Saint Germain and Gaylord's friend greeted us. Saint Germain asked us to be seated, and breakfast was served immediately. The first thing that appeared was most delicious fruit. Then came what he called sun cereal, over which was a substance like honey and whipped cream. Several other dishes were served, and we finished the meal with a steaming hot drink that took the place of coffee, but was not like anything physical I have ever tasted. Even after our many experiences, it always seemed so marvelous to me to have things appear at the conscious command of these blessed ascended masters. Everything came directly from out the universal substance the instant they desired it. Food, clothing, gold, anything and everything they wanted. They are all the word master implies, It is the only description that does them justice. They are glorious and majestic always. As we arose from the table, I heard Gaylord's friend address Leto as Your Highness, and again I wondered why that title was used in a retreat. She turned to me and explained most graciously, "My brother, whom you have met, inherited the title of Prince Rexford, and I that of Princess Louise. Mine has clung to me through the years for no particular reason. That is why I am often addressed as Your Highness." "Forgive my curiosity," I replied, as I realized how keenly aware of my every thought and feeling these ascended masters were. "Come," said Saint Germain, "we shall go first to the television chamber." We followed him, and soon came to a great circular chamber. In the center of the room stood an enormous reflector, surrounded by a maze of electrical apparatus, at one side of which was a large dial. "This room," said Saint Germain, "is insulated in a special way which enables us to make observations of very great accuracy. By means of this instrument, through focusing the dial upon any given point on the surface of the earth, we can see instantly any place or activity occurring at any distance. Notice, I shall direct it to New York." He turned the dial, and we saw as clearly as if we had been in Manhattan the Grand Central Station, Fifth Avenue, and the Statue of Liberty. Then, turning the dial to London, we were shown Trafalgar Square, the Houses of Parliament, the British Museum, the Bank of England, and the River Thames. He turned it again, and we saw Melbourne and Yokohama, and we were able to observe everything as clearly as if physically present. "This wonderful instrument," he continued, "has been in use in this retreat for more than 100 years. Come now into the adjoining room. It is the radio chamber. Notice the intense stillness. The walls, floor, and ceiling are covered with a precipitated substance that makes it absolutely sound and vibration-proof." He stepped to the instrument that stood in the center of the room and directed it to New York. We immediately heard the sound of the traffic, and as we listened more closely, we could hear clearly and distinctly the conversation of individuals passing on the street. Distance made no difference. "This instrument," he said, "will soon be in use everywhere. Now let us go to the chemical laboratory where some of the brothers are at work upon many wonderful inventions. Here ways have been discovered to counteract destructive gases, chemicals, and activities of various kinds that the sinister force and its unfortunate pawns might try to use against humanity. For it is positively known in certain quarters that feverish efforts are constantly being made to produce various substances that are of a very destructive kind. The brothers in this retreat work to neutralize all such activity. Every time the misguided members of mankind make the discovery of a more than ordinary destructive agent, the chemist making such experiments always loses his body. When his diabolical work reaches a certain point, for the destructive quality he desires to use upon the body of mankind reacts upon his own. Next, we visited the cosmic ray chamber. This room, explained Saint Germain, is lined with pure metallic gold. The brothers of certain advancement who work here are taught how to distinguish the difference between the various rays, and to direct and use them for stupendous good. The great ascended masters are constantly watching in the world for those students whose attainments will permit them to take up this work. When Bob understood this phase of their activity, he became most enthusiastic. "I would love to serve in this manner," he exclaimed. "We shall see," said Saint Germain, as he smiled knowingly. "Among those who are working in this room, there are 7 of the brothers and 3 of the sisters who are just completing their training in the use of these rays. At the coming council, they will be allotted their field of service in using this activity, for which training in many lives has fitted them. Now we shall visit the Chamber of Art, where 20 of the brothers and 10 of the sisters are being trained in a new kind of art which they will bring forth into the outer world. They are being instructed concerning the secret of imperishable colors and shown how to produce them. Within the next 20 years, This new form of art will find its way into the life of humanity and bring with it a tremendous uplift. From here, we shall go to the Chamber of Music. It is a most beautiful place, I assure you, and the perfection of the instruments is truly remarkable. Saint Germain led the way, and we entered with great anticipation. "This is a new metal for band instruments," he continued, showing us certain alloys, "which gives an unbelievably delicate tone. Here are three new materials for making violins. As you will see, one looks like mother of pearl, one like frosted silver, and one like Roman gold. The musical instruments of the new age will be made of materials like these." One of the brothers played these instruments for us, and human ears have never been blessed by more beautiful sounds. Each was distinctly different, but all were so beautiful there seemed hardly any choice between them. In rooms adjoining the Chamber of Music, beautiful musical compositions were being written and prepared so the brothers could project these magnificent harmonies into the consciousness of musicians working in the outer world. "Some of these brothers," said Saint Germain, "will come into the outer activity and work in the capacity of teachers, while others will serve from the invisible side of life. We are now entering the Chamber of State. Here training is given in the higher forms of statecraft and national government. Some 40 of the brothers are being trained, as you see, in the right use of this knowledge, and are also being shown how to project it to others who are already in official positions. That is, wherever the sincerity of the official will permit. 10 of these wonderful brothers will go forth in person and serve by being elected to governmental positions in the usual way. 5 of them will go to the United States of America. During our visit to these various rooms and the explanation of the work the brothers were engaged in, we felt this the most wonderful education of our lives. It was such a relief to know that notwithstanding all the distressing outward appearance of the conditions in which mankind finds itself today, the power of the mighty I Am is doing everything possible to bring enlightenment and relief to mankind. It lifted our hearts and hopes to the height of expectation for great good to all mankind in the near future, at least for all who desire the constructive plan of life. We were shown secret chambers of riches untold, others of records so old it seemed almost inconceivable, some dated back to the advent of man upon this planet. When we returned to the council chamber, we found we had been gone 8 hours. Not once in all this amazing subterranean city did we find the least particle of dust, dirt, or confusion of any kind. Everything was in a most wonderful state, perfect and spotless. We marveled at this, and Saint Germain explained the law concerning it. This perfect cleanliness is maintained by the conscious use of the great cosmic rays, and within the next 100 years, hundreds of housewives will be using the violet ray to keep private homes in the same wonderful state. Oh, that humanity might realize quickly what glory, freedom, and blessing stand ready for their use at every instant when they hold to wonderful ideals unwaveringly, tenaciously, rely upon the mighty I Am presence, and know it is the only real power of permanent accomplishment. Suddenly we felt a tremendous vibration, and looking around us, saw 5 of the ascended masters had arrived from India. For the men wore turbans. There were 2 ladies and 3 gentlemen. As we were presented to them, we were surprised indeed, for 1 gentleman and 1 lady were 2 of whom we had heard much. The gentleman came up to Rex, Bob, and myself, the lady to Nada and Pearl, and extended a most gracious invitation to be their guests as long as we were in India, and consider their home ours at any time. "Will you," said the gentleman, turning to Gaylord's friend, "come with these friends and bring them to us as our guests when they are ready to come to India?" "I shall be most happy," he replied, "to accept your invitation and take them to Bombay in my yacht." Saint Germain then asked us all to be seated, that we might enjoy another precipitated dinner. The entire meal seemed more delicious than ever. We listened attentively to the work being planned and the reports of what had already been accomplished. For the first time in my life, I realized how very little the outside world knows of this true inner activity and how puny human achievement becomes in relation to that which is accomplished by these ascended masters who are expressing their full freedom as sons of God. It is fortunate indeed that there are infinitely more magnificent ways of life than our humanity is now experiencing. When one can look away from his own mental concept long enough to get a perspective of his own intellect in relation to the rest of the universe, he really begins to learn something of importance. We all need to take mental journeys that will stretch our mental muscles and realize that each human intellect is only one out of approximately 3 billion souls in incarnation upon this earth. Our earth is one of the smallest in our solar system. Our system is only an atom in the galaxy to which we belong, and there are galaxies of galaxies. When the student thinks of this occasionally, he will no longer be able to accept the conceited theories and egotistical opinions of intellects that scoff and doubt the existence and marvelous manifestation of perfection which these ascended masters constantly express. The personality of anyone is only of as much importance in the magnificent scheme of life as it is obedient to the mighty I Am Presence by letting perfection expand into the outer activity of the individual. Otherwise, the personality is only a barnacle in the universe, using substance and energy without building anything permanent. Time sped by on wings under the intensive training we were receiving from these great perfected ones, until the day came for the great international council. The brothers and sisters kept arriving at intervals from every part of the world, and when the meeting was called at 7 o'clock, more than 200 guests were present, most of them being chiefs of the various councils. When all were in readiness, we bowed our heads in silence and awaited the arrival of the great presiding master. Suddenly, a great oval of dazzling light appeared at the head of the main table, and as we watched it steadily for a moment, a man's form gradually became visible within it, growing more and more definite and tangible as he lowered the vibratory activity to manifest in our octave of consciousness until his body became clearly visible, perfectly tangible. His face was truly magnificent, glorious and radiant to behold, the eyes dazzling, and his whole being luminous from head to foot with the majesty and power of his mighty I Am Presence. The first tones of his voice sent an electrical thrill through my body that I shall never forget throughout eternity, as he said, "Beloved ones, be seated." After listening to a brief report from certain of the brothers, he commended them, and then, in a very brief manner, gave directions for their continued work. When he had finished, he turned to us, saying, "We can use many more who are at a point where they are ready to be trained in the understanding and use of the great cosmic rays of light. It is my privilege to inform you that we have 10 with us who are ready, if it is their desire to take up the work." All was intense expectation as he asked those whose names he called to stand if they were present. Then he went on. "Nada, Pearl, Leto, Rex, Bob, Electra, Gaylord, and his beloved friend, Nada, and Daniel Rayborn. Beloved sisters and brothers from America, this event brings very great joy and is of much importance to the Great White Brotherhood. You are to be congratulated, as well as the Brotherhood, that this has become possible. Within a short time, you will go to India for a stay of 10 months' training, and then return here to finish it. You will be instructed in the use of these mighty rays, and through their use, you have an opportunity to give a transcendent service. On the fourth day from today, you will return to Alexandria, and there Electra will join the party. From thence, journey at your convenience to Bombay. Your beloved host will conduct you to your destination. Is there the slightest objection on the part of anyone chosen for this work? If so, speak now. We all joyously accepted and expressed our gratitude for the opportunity to serve in this way to the best of our ability. There was a great deal more under consideration at that time, which was of great importance, but I have not permission to record it here. The meeting finished, and we spent an hour meeting the other members present. Our friend from India presented us to the presiding master, and I shall never forget the power that shot through my body as I shook hands with him. It seemed as if I were lifted completely off the floor. One of the brothers from South America brought us greetings from Gaylord, whom he had seen 2 days previously. The entire council was a perfect manifestation of great decision, supreme wisdom, and limitless activity. Presently, beautiful strains of music were heard in the atmosphere, and all turned involuntarily toward the master. He raised his hands, giving his blessing to all present, and as he did so, he rose from the floor. The oval of dazzling light enfolded him, and he disappeared. Never in all eternity will I ever forget that first visit to the Arabian retreat of the Great White Brotherhood. 4 days later, we left this marvelous haven of peace, light, and wisdom, with the love and blessing from all its members, whose loving service to the great I Am present in themselves and in all humanity is the most wonderful activity in life's experience. We made the trip back to the coast of Arabia by night, where the yacht awaited us, and a few moments after we went aboard, we were gliding swiftly through the Red Sea on the wings of the night. The next morning, we breakfasted on deck in order to watch the sunrise, for in that part of the world it is truly a most glorious spectacle. The evening of the second day, we arrived at Electra's home in Alexandria and found she was fully aware that she was to serve with us in using the great cosmic rays of the light of God that never fails.